You were born with individual strengths and a unique purpose. Don't let fears, false beliefs, or life's happenings diminish your influence. It's time to live and lead for impact. Host Kirsten Ross, expert of transformation, will help you defeat the drama and overcome the trauma that can stop you in your tracks. You'll gain focus, find confidence, and take bold action. Unleash passionate, purposeful you. Let's go.
Welcome to Live and Lead for Impact. I'm Kirsten Ross, your host, and this is episode 165. I'm really excited about the guest that I have today. I can't wait for you to hear what he's up to, the impact he's making, and what has motivated him. So his name is Henry Das. Henry started his first business in 1991, selling, installing, servicing, and financing computers to large corporations. Since then, he has founded a succession in firms in the e-commerce, finance, real estate, and consumer product spaces. For much of the past decade, Henry has taken his experience as an entrepreneur and used it as a platform to coach other business owners and founders. In addition, this list goes on, guys. In addition, in 2019, he self-published a 432-page book on everything you need to know about how to grow and manage your money. He offers a 20-week course where he teaches it to you one-on-one. He also runs curated masterminds on business and finance. In his infinite leisure, which I don't know where he's finding that, he also writes screenplays for fun, plays golf, travels when not in lockdown, plays, okay, I don't even know what this is.
Catan, Settlers of Catan.
Ah, okay. I still don't know what that is, but okay.
It's a board game.
Okay. With his three boys and does other fun stuff. He offers free coaching for any and all for 3 months. Helping people clear away the clutter and get focused on what matters. Seeing the transformation, putting himself out there, his family, understanding your motives, and doing it anyway. Oh my goodness.
I offer free coaching for 1 month for podcast listeners if they go to podcast.dosknowledge.com and fill out the little form.
Okay.
3 months is, I'm generous, but 3 months is
I know, I don't know. Okay.
Although I did give away 3 months in April, May, and June of 2020 at the beginning of COVID to anybody and everybody as just a gesture for people who were just totally blindsided by COVID.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that was nice. Yeah, I was thinking that is a really long time. I do some 30-minute things. 3 months, that's okay. Something. So, all right. Well, so I'm really excited to hear, of all of these things, we'll probably have to pick one or two here. Like, what is the main focus of the kind of impact that you want to make in the world?
Pick a lane is what it is. That's what the cool kids say. But I tell people I'm a super highway. I'm just a reckless driver on a super high 10 lane super highway. So coaching has always been my I shouldn't say always, for the last 10 years has really been what I focus on. So I coach entrepreneurs. I coach just regular people, entrepreneurs and everyday people in finance. Masterminds is a type of coaching. I have a little different spin on masterminds. I call them curated masterminds. So I run the thing, but I don't participate. Mm-hmm. So I keep the accountability group accountable because I found that a lot of mastermind groups fall apart because it's a little too democratic. They say Americans make really bad mountain climbers because they're way too democratic. And it's the same thing with masterminds. Someone has to take charge and someone has to hold people accountable. And it's just how it is.
Mm-hmm. Okay, good, good. So tell me, what experiences of all of that you've been up to have really motivated you to make this unique impact?
You know, the coaching was something that I sort of always did. I wouldn't call it a hobby, but people just came to me and asked me for advice or asked me to share my experience. I don't usually give advice. I follow the gestalt that I learned in EO, Entrepreneurs Organization, of sharing your experiences and then allowing people to make their own decisions, as opposed to saying, this is what I think you should do. Mm-hmm. It's more like, well, when I was in a similar situation to what you described to me, here's what I did and here's what the outcome was. So you can take that information and form your own decision. And that's something that's come natural to me. And again, I've got three boys. I've coached probably 40 sports teams, basketball, baseball, football, lacrosse, and soccer. So I've done a lot of that youth coaching. No different than coaching adults, except they're usually just shorter and don't weigh as much.
Well, although when they're real young, they're also doing cartwheels on the field.
When they're like 5 years old, there's usually like on the soccer field.
Yes, and the grass
throwing. There's
usually
a couple of them who are having a protracted conversation somewhere around midfield while the ball is running around.
And then there's the scrum, you know, where everybody's chasing the ball.
It's adorable. But it's a semi-organized chaos. But you know what? So is entrepreneurship.
This is
semi-organized
true.
Chaos. And my job is to bring some clarity, you know, take your blinders off when you're a little too tunnel visioned and maybe put your blinders back on when you're falling victim to shiny object syndrome.
Very good.
Everybody's different.
I was going to say, it's so funny because I, unusual amount of time, use parenting stories for illustrations for leadership, which, you know, when you think about it, that's kind of weird, but you know, they do apply.
Yeah. No question.
So tell me about one experience that really motivates you and fires you up about helping people.
I can tell you a story from a few years ago, not from a current client, but a former client. And this is a classic entrepreneurial tale. He didn't want to hire anybody to do sales, right? Mm-hmm. Nobody can do sales as well as I do. Mm-hmm. You know, and he's in the tech space and, you know, all those things that entrepreneurs tell themselves. But after a couple of months of, I hate to say wearing him down, but just talking it through, he finally took the leap of faith and he hired a woman whose previous job was as a hostess at a restaurant. She had absolutely no qualifications to, from the technical side, the SaaS product, this great esoteric thing that he had built. 1 month later, she had already beaten his biggest month ever.
Wow.
And he very sheepishly admitted that he should have done this much sooner. It's like, you know what?
You
when
think?
It happens is when it's going to happen. Right?
Yeah.
Because she was a salesperson. She was, you know, client facing, as we call it. She was used to dealing with people in the general public, used to dealing with people in person, used to dealing with them on phone. And that's what sales is.
Yeah.
Right? You got to be a people person. You really don't, you don't have to know all of the technical ins and outs. Certainly it helps, but that's what you have people for. Mm-hmm. And people that I know who are, you know, seven figure salespeople, they're like, yeah, I've got people for that. Mm-hmm. Somebody asks me a technical question, tries to stump me. It's like, dude, I don't know the answer, but you know what? I know how to find out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's not what you want your salespeople doing anyway.
No, salespeople sell.
Yes.
That's their job. And if you find one, they're as good as gold. But again, that's what entrepreneurs do. They convince themselves that their business can't exist without them, when in fact, we need to set up a situation where their business absolutely can exist without them.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I call it obsoleting yourself. You know, that's the holy grail. You want to obsolete yourself.
Mm-hmm.
But the other side of that is that a lot of people don't want to do that. Well, if I obsolete myself, Henry, and my business runs on autopilot, well, what do I do now? Oh, I don't know. That's a first world problem if there ever was one.
Right. Yeah,
that
good
one I can
to
help
have.
You sit down and figure out. Maybe start another business, maybe a philanthropy, maybe go travel the world when we're not on lockdown. I don't know, but we'll chop it up and we'll figure it out.
Yep. I can't tell you, too, the number of times. It's so funny. Like, you'll identify an issue and then they'll tell me if this has happened to you. And then they'll tell you why their business is so unique from all others. And so this circumstance can't be changed because.
Oh, exactly. Yeah. I'll say your business is unique, just like everybody else. Right. These are the stories that as business owners or just as people, we tell ourselves. Mm-hmm. So what does a coach do? A coach is basically meant to gently push against that. Have you questioned that? Mm-hmm. Right? Be mindful of the assumptions you're making and figuring out whether they're actually based in fact or they're distorted by some other input. And it's very difficult to find people who can do that who don't have an agenda. Mm-hmm. Right? You talk to your spouse, you talk to your friends. Sure, it's free advice, but free advice is pretty much the worst advice imaginable.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep. I had a CEO tell me that it's brutal working with me. And I just, that's like the best compliment I've ever gotten because I know I'm speaking truth. And sometimes the truth is painful, but that's where the motivation for the change comes. And then you come up with the strategies that are going to get them through that.
Yeah. I find people bail. It's like 6 months. Just when you're starting to get somewhere and just when it's starting to get hard, the fight or flight muscle kicks in and they fly away, right? They hit what we call resistance. You know, I'm a stock trader. So stocks trade with support and resistance. Stock keeps hitting a level and bounces off and bounces off and bounces off. And sometimes it never gets to the next level. And it's the same thing in entrepreneurship. You keep bouncing off this invisible ceiling that you created. Right. My job is to get you to the other side. Mm-hmm. And then the first time you do it, the next time it's not so unfamiliar anymore because you're going to keep hitting plateaus as you level up. It's just natural.
Yep.
Right. Nothing goes up like Bitcoin, where it's a straight parabolic move. I don't know if you follow that.
But yeah. Yep. It's been kind of meteoric lately.
I do an investing mastermind on Tuesdays and the last couple of sessions, we've been talking a lot about Bitcoin. I had a little bit of a waterfall decline today, and I expect more weakness in the past. But no, things don't go straight up like that. They go up, they plateau, they pull back. Business is the same way.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So tell me, what is the biggest internal or external challenge that you've had to overcome, and how did you overcome it?
I think so. When I started my first business 30 years ago, literally 30 years ago, it's amazing. I had a business partner, and I was Mr. Inside and he was Mr. Outside. So I ran the operations. I basically did everything internally to the business, and his job was to go out and do sales. And we had a really nice business partnership, lasted 10 years. We did, I think our biggest top line was over $4 million. Plus we had a $30 million leasing company that we created. It was really, really great until it wasn't, right? Mm-hmm. And anybody who's had partnership knows how that happens. And then I decided I was going to go solo, right? I was like, Sting, I don't need the police anymore, right? Dated reference, but he decided I'm going to go solo. I can do it on my own. and now I had to sell. And that was a big challenge because I had never really done any selling. And after a while, being thrown right into the frying pan, I figured out, hey, you know what? I'm actually pretty good at this. Now, I realize it's tough to wear both hats. It's tough to be both Mr. Inside and Mr. Outside. So if you're a solopreneur, as I am now in a coaching practice, that's a difficult challenge. But it was a little eye-opening for me. And the only reason that I actually picked myself up by the bootstraps and went out and started selling was because I had nobody else to do it.
Mm-hmm. How did you use your time? Like, how did you balance everything?
Well, you know what? I work all the time. So it's sort of like, you know, you can compartmentalize things. I don't multitask as a rule. I'm more of a hunter than a gatherer. So, you know, I see the wildebeest, I shoot the wildebeest, I take it home, I cut it up and I eat it, you know, all very discrete synchronous tasks. So you've got to be really super organized, right? Mm-hmm. Got to be able to find time to do the sort of the administrative stuff. Now, it doesn't mean I didn't hire people, right? I'm not sitting there doing my own accounting. You hire a CPA, you hire a bookkeeper. You know, they're really I'm writing a new book now with the unlikely title of Codfish, right? Codfish. Yeah, this is kind of a crazy.
Yeah, I'm going to need a little more information on that in a minute.
So Codfish stands for customer support, operations, development, finance, infrastructure/IT, sales and marketing, and human resources. I call them the seven silos that every business must have. And it's not, you know, it's not any grandiose invention. There's other guys who've written books similar. But I came up with this on a coaching call a couple of years ago, just sort of off the top of my head. And then I challenged my clients to find something that didn't fit into one of those silos. Mm-hmm. And to this day, no one's been able to find it. So these are the seven definable areas of a business, right? So the one I just talked about, sales and marketing, I had no experience in my partnership doing that. I was doing the operations side. I was working with people to do the finance side. I worked with my partner to do HR, but sales and marketing was a bit of a mystery. So I had to figure that stuff out.
Mm-hmm.
Most businesses that start up, you know, founder hangs up a shingle and says, we are in the SEO business, let's say, right? There's usually some origin story, mm-hmm. right? My first business came out of the customer support silo. My future partner at the time, he wasn't my partner. He was handing me business, low hanging fruit. And the reason that I was successful was because I was giving them white glove service. I was giving a high level of attention to these clients that they simply weren't getting from the commodity vendors out there. Then we had to figure out how to populate all the other silos. And that's a challenge. It's a challenge mm-hmm. for all businesses, right?
Yeah.
There's usually a couple that you're good at, a couple in the middle that you're like, I'm okay at, and usually there's one or two that are your Achilles heel. So when we're diving into a business with my coaching clients, we got to figure out, you know, where's your strong suits? Where are your weak suits? How are we going to maximize your core strengths? And how are we going to minimize those weaknesses.
Mm-hmm. And then they've got to overcome some generally fears about hiring and all of that, you know, because no one seems to invest in the professionals to that's not necessarily one of the first things they invest in is like a human resource person to kind of handle that piece. I find that so often they're afraid of making wrong hiring choices.
Hiring is, I wrote a thing a few years ago called 5 Reasons Small Businesses Fail. It's a freebie. It's on my website. If you go to my, you know, DAS knowledge, D-A-A-S knowledge, or you can go to D-A-S-S knowledge because people misspell my name and I have it redirected because I own both URLs, being Belts and Braces. And it's, and you know, there's 5 things. And number 4, actually, sorry, I did it in reverse. Number 2 is hiring.
Mm-hmm.
Most people suck at hiring. They just do.
Yeah.
They don't hire for the right thing, or they grab the low hanging fruit. Well, he's my, you know, cousin's brother's orthodontist's nephew or something like that.
Exactly.
but apparently he's a guru at, you know, CRO or some esoteric thing.
Or worse, you hear, well, I always say like my Aunt Betty Lou's, you know, neighbor's daughter who couldn't get a job anywhere. And I felt so bad, you know, well, there's probably a reason the old Betty Lou who's neighbor's
Betty
daughter.
Kicking around. She's got nothing to do with COVID. Couldn't get a job. Hire her on the side. Yeah, let's not do that. Right.
And, okay. Let me help you clean up this mess and then create a strategy.
Yeah. Well, then what happens is they'll hire for one thing. I had a client kept failing. And, well, we hire for culture, but then they forget about skill. And then they hire for skill, and then they forget about some other attribute that they mm-hmm. need. How about we build something and we look at the areas where maybe you need to make compromises mm-hmm. depending on the price point?
Yeah.
Right?
We got wiggle room here and no wiggle room there.
Right. If you have unlimited resources, then you can hire the best of the best. Somebody with no flaws, right? But most people are not in that position.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, it's always fun. I've been doing these. Have you heard of Clubhouse? Are you on Clubhouse yet?
No.
Oh, so, well, we'll talk about that after because I just did another interview and I was already talking about Clubhouse, but I'm in love with it and I'm having fun. It's a new social media app. And it's amazing. I'm having a ton of fun, but it's all audio and you connect with people in rooms or in events and there's a stage and microphones and all that kind of stuff. But So anyway, I've been doing daily leadership talks where I put people in the hot seat and I give them customized strategies. But man, a common theme is, you know, hiring the friend or hiring the family member, you know, and I've been working with family businesses for years. I actually dive into the middle of all that stuff all the time. But it's just funny to hear, you know, how much of a trend there is in kind of newer entrepreneurs. And, you know, like, oh, so-and-so is not my friend anymore. It didn't work out, you know.
Wow. My first business partner was my best friend from college. And it was, yeah. So I know how that works.
Yeah,
and
it's funny.
We had a terrible breakup and we were not friends for a while, but we're friends again.
That's good. That's
kind of cool.
Yeah, my son, who is now 22, he started his first business when he was in middle school with a friend. And it was so funny because I was already a coach at that time. And he, you know, he came home and it was it was called Balacore, and they were making custom skateboard, like I forget what the decks.
Okay.
And yeah, so they had a logo and a website. They were doing YouTube videos. They were making some, you know, skateboard wax and all that. And they would have their little meetings in the gym, you know, like in the locker room before gym class. And so he, you know, he was like, what, 12, you know, 11 and 12, something like that. And I think he was in sixth grade. So but anyway, one day he comes home and he's like, Mom, I kind of figured out like how much we're spending on these decks and then how much work it is to finish them. And I just don't feel like the money we can get is worth it. And I said, oh, yep, that's your net profit. And then he said, and I just feel like I'm doing a lot more of the work. So I'm like, oh, let's coach you through some conversations you have to have. It's a good time to learn.
Yeah, my oldest son, Matt, who's now just turned 29, but when he was about six and we were living in New York City, we were living in Greenwich Village, and we were walking one day and he saw people selling, you know, kids selling lemonade on the sidewalk.
Mm-hmm.
So he came home and he said, I want to do that. I want to sell cookies and lemonade. And so I used it as a teachable moment. And I said, okay, how much are we going to charge? Well, we'll charge 50 cents. How much can we get out of the stuff? Well, I think we can get, you know, 40 that I said, so how much money is that? And he's sitting there doing the math. And he said, $20. I said, great, 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 great. I said, okay, now we got to figure out whatever all the stuff is going to cost in order to do that. And he looks at me straight in the eye and he says, oh, that's your job.
You were in the purchasing department.
Yeah. No, I was the venture capitalist.
Logistics.
I was the guy
right.
who was going to shove the money in the back door, right, while right. he pumps up his top line and nobody makes any money. That was my job.
There you go.
Or maybe in this case, I was the angel investor. So it was adorable. It really was very cute.
But you got to love the, you know, the entrepreneurial drive at a young age. But yeah, it's funny.
No question.
All those, you know, lessons.
It's tough. Yeah. They find out early. It's tough.
Yeah. Right? Yes. Absolutely. So tell me, because I mean, you've been through so many different businesses and ups and downs, I'm sure. So how do you stay motivated moving during tough times? What are some of your strategies?
You know, back during the Great Recession, where things were just really crummy all the way around, and my business wasn't doing well, and my wife's business, because we're both entrepreneurs, we were house poor. We were living in a ridiculous house with, you know, huge taxes and all that stuff. And we were fighting a lot, and it was just really not a great time for us. And I remember saying to myself, I had a little mantra that I used to say. I would say, you know what? Kids are healthy. Got a couple bucks. Parents are in good shape. You know, I just checked off a little list of these core things that allowed me to kind of see through the fog, right? Because mm-hmm. if you feel like you're just, it's a tsunami, right? We're seeing that now with COVID, obviously. Mm-hmm. And I know people who are struggling, you know, mightily. I mean, that was why I opened up my practice to everybody. And I had 100 phone calls in 3 months with, you know, I had multiple phone calls with a couple of people.
Mm-hmm.
But I asked them the same basic question when we started. I'm saying, look, if this lasts till the end of 2021, are you going to be okay? meaning you and your nuclear family. Do you got enough resources available, even if you have to go borrow some money? And universally, the people that I spoke to who were all entrepreneurs, and some business came to a crashing halt. I mean, literally went from, I know one person, one of the first ones I spoke to, she said we were doing, I don't know, close to 20K MRR. Overnight, we went to zero. Mm. She was in the travel space. Zero.
Yeah.
As bad as the Great Recession was, we never went to zero.
Right.
And we never went to zero overnight. Mm-hmm. But she said, no. I mean, I might have to live like Gandhi for a little while. I might have to be on the, you know, the the ramen noodle and diet Coke for a while, but I'll be okay. And that was gratifying to hear that from people, because that meant that they had a core sense for a core perspective that this is not the end of the world. It feels mm-hmm. like the end of the world, and certainly 2008. When I had another business partner who committed suicide, jumped off a perfectly good bridge, leaving me holding a multi-million dollar bag. I mean, it felt like it was the end of the world. Mm. So it was a challenge. It was a very, very difficult challenge.
Yeah, I'm so sorry for that. Wow.
Yeah, it was terrible. I wrote about it in my book. My 432-page money book.
Okay. So you covered that in there.
Oh, yeah, I covered a lot. Yeah, it's kind of sort of like a money memoir as well as a how-to book. Tried mm-hmm. to give it some character, and I didn't sugarcoat it with all pretty stories. In fact, my copy editor said maybe you want to add a few pretty stories, because everything I'm reading here sounds like gloom and doom.
Need a little pick me up, huh?
Yeah, need a little pick me up. But it's those are the things that stick with you. Right. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm a stock trader. Mm-hmm. I could make, $20,000 on a stock trade and I'll forget it. But if I lose $500, I'll remember that 30 years later. Mm-hmm. One dumb trade where I lost $500.
Well, you got to use your own advice there and look on the positive side. Have that gratitude. Right.
Yeah. Sometimes you kick yourself when you do stupid stuff.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
You just do. And it's like, I don't want to do that stupid stuff again. I'm happy to do new stupid stuff. Bright, yeah. Shiny stupid stuff.
Yes.
But I don't want to do dusty old stupid stuff.
That is, I like that. Yes. Right. Because at least you learned. Like, don't do the old stupid stuff again. Learn from it. If you're not doing new stupid stuff, then you're not growing enough or learning enough or taking enough chances.
No, if you're, like I always say, if you ain't falling, you ain't skiing, right?
Yeah.
I mean, unless you're just the best of the best,
yeah,
you're just not pushing yourself.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not talking about, going off the side of Mount Everest, but every once in a while, you got to challenge yourself on something that that's going to push you.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. That lizard brain of yours is going to tell you not to do it, but just do it anyway, right?
Mm-hmm. You got it.
Awesome. So as we finish up today, what are some words of wisdom that you have for others who want to make their impact?
I don't want to sound like a Nike commercial and say, just do it. But ordinarily, like the number five reason that small businesses fail is confusing passion with commitment. Right. It's okay to be passionate as something that draws you into it. But if you're not committed to it for the long haul, at mm-hmm. least from a business perspective, it's too easy to check out. Right. We just celebrated our 30th wedding anniversary on January 1st.
Congratulations.
Okay. Thank you. We got married on New Year's Eve in Vegas. We were just a couple of dumb kids. That didn't happen because we, 30 years later, we're passionate about each other. Although I would argue that, we have our moments, but it's because we've been committed to all of the ups and downs. But when it comes to making a difference in the world, I think that shifts a little. I really do think that you need to be passionate about it. It has to be something that is really at the core of your being and something that you consider to be in incredibly high regard. If you're going to do something really like philanthropic to try to change the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right? Yeah. You need that passion, the fuel.
And right. Take the profit motive out. You're doing this altruistically.
Mm-hmm.
You better be passionate about it. You need to be committed, certainly, but it has to bring you joy. It really does. If it brings you joy, it will bring everybody else that you're touching joy as well. No question about it.
Great. Well, I love that. Yeah. So just make sure it's something that you're really focused on, can commit to, because you're so passionate. You have the fuel of passion pushing you through the tough times. It'll give you the tenacity. And so make sure before you launch, and if that's how you feel about it, launch. I'm hearing you saying. Yep.
Yeah, it is. Now, remember, when it comes to philanthropic things, when you remove the profit motive, everything becomes very political. So you need to maintain a little bit of perspective on that. Because if you're an entrepreneur and you get involved in philanthropies, you'll discover that very quickly. I know from my experience and my wife's experience. It's like high school again. Mm. Right?
Yeah.
It really is.
Yeah.
So be mindful of that. Be aware of that. Understand the rules. We all went through high school. Remember what it was like. Even though I'm 61 years old, I still remember what it was like. And then just channel that and no harm will become you.
Great. Good. Leave it on a positive note. Awesome. Well, thanks so much for all that you've shared about your stories and given some tips and tricks and some motivation for people so they can get out there and make their own impact. So if you want to connect with Henry, go to DAS, D-A-A-S, or it sounds like D-A-S-S works as well. DAASKnowledge.com. So, and that'll be on the show notes as well. So if you want to check out all the notes from today, along with a link to Henry's website, go to defeatthedrama.com and then click on the podcast site. And this is episode number 165. And if you are on Clubhouse, connect with me. I'd love to see you in there. I'm sharing tons of information in there. You can find me. I'm at Kirsten R. Vogel. And I'm doing some daily events right now. So, and if you need some specific strategies, you can also book a little 30-minute session with me and we'll do a leadership breakthrough. You can find that at defeatthedrama.com/call. All right. Thanks so much for listening. Share with others and get out there and make your big impact.